I can't afford that. About the Mishnah in Perek Hamishi, Mishnah Tazayin, of Ava Shetliya B'Gavar and Ava Sheinah Tliya B'Gavar. Okay? So we said that the Ava Sheinah Tliya B'Gavar, the love that is not dependent on anything, is like the love of David and Yohanan. And the love that's Tliya B'Gavar is like the love of Tamar and Amram, the historian Shmuel Beis. Okay. So we mentioned, we asked the question, we said, what is the Kiddush? Of course, it's clear the Davar, so it's Batl, Davar, Batl, Lava, it's a logical formula. What does the Mishnah have to tell me this? What's the Kiddush of the Mishnah? So we stated that the Kiddush of the Mishnah is that it's a psychological insight the Mishnah is telling us. That a person always thinks that it's not a clear of the Davar, when in fact it is clear of the Davar. The person rationalizes. That a person always, before he does a chet, he always has a certain rationalization. What is the rationalization? The rationalization is, how could Tamar and Amnon, be involved in this ma'aseh avera? Tamar didn't want to, but Amnon did. Amnon forced her. So how could Amnon do that if the world was a Ben HaMelech? But the answer is that Amnon had told himself one thing, that the reason why I need this Maisa Avera is because of the structure of my nature. It's not a chesaron, it's not a defect, it's just something intrinsically that I need. And that is the type of Horas Heper that a person always gives himself to Shwan Avera. And basically it's universal. It's universal. A person who does a Maisa Avera always has the same answer. The answer is that I'm special in this situation. This situation, this is what I need. And since this is what I need, I'm constructed this way, so it's not considered an avera, but God knows that this is something which is necessary for me, and that's why it's okay for me to do it. An exception. There's an exception. I say that this concept, that this type of Ross Heter is really universal. It's universal. Why is it universal? I'll tell you why it's universal. Because according to Yadis, the truth of the matter is that a human being can only really be happy if his energies are diverted towards Chochmas Hashem. That's the only state in which he'll find happiness. Any other state, he's always going to find frustration. Since that is the case, because the tithers themselves always lead to frustration, by definition. We went through this a number of times, why it is that way psychologically. Okay. So, once a person understands the way Yadis conceives the human mind, it knows that the energies of the human mind can only be satisfied in one area, if it's directed towards Chochmas Hashem, and if it's like David HaMelech says, Kicholas Avoni, because the person has a capacity for love, tremendous amount of energy in the human psyche, that energy can never be used, can never be made use of. In the physical way, it's only a temporary fulfillment. But then after a while, the energy reestablishes itself and will always be expressed in frustration. And there's only one outlet for the energy. The energy can only be satisfied if it's a love of Chochmas Hashem. That's the only state, the only normal state of the human being. So the concept of psychology, that there's a normal state of a human being, is not true. There may be a normal state, but what the psychologists call normal, by definition, is unhappy. By definition, is unhappy. So, that being the case, whenever a person is tempted by a Maisa Avera, what is the temptation of the Maisa Avera? The temptation of the Maisa Avera is very simple. It's that the frustration that you're experiencing will now be removed. And the person sees relief. Relief is on the way. It means to say that the fantasy tells him that he will be able to satisfy the energies that are looking for satisfaction in a different way other than through Avas Hashem, through Chochmas Hashem. It's false. But the reason why this method is successful is because it's partially true. There is a momentary relief. Momentary relief. The only thing is that the person assumes there's going to be coming. That is fate. That's why fate is always a momentary phenomenon. But after the fate is over, then the person finds himself in a more tragic situation than he was before. That's the story with a novel. Let's say I am a novel. Next day, when the novel was a shaker, everything was fine. But the only problem was that he had to wake up. He had to face another day. And the moment he faced the next day, and the energies regroup, and he finds himself in a greater state of frustration than he did before. That is basically the flaw. Fate is a flaw. Fate is not what the Gaon calls sin. Sin is an alien concept to the artist. Fate means simply a mistake. It's a mistake. Since that's the case, it turns out that every time a person is a chotzer, he has to have that same kind of rationale. Because a person cannot be a chotzer unless he has a rationale. Every person, no matter what he does, even if he knows he's a drunkard, he's a drug addict, whatever it might be. But the point is, the moment before he indulges, he's convinced that this is the right thing to do. That moment. Next day, he's wrong. But that moment, he's convinced he's right. Why? Because of the fact. He's lured by the fact that he will be able to satisfy his frustrations in another way, other than directing his energy to something else. Therefore, it's a universal phenomenon. Now, in truth, every person is a philosopher. Cannot escape being a philosopher. In the back of a person's mind, there's always a philosophical voice telling them that this is what you need. This is what you should do. A person has trouble, has problems. He always hears a little voice in the back of his mind telling him, this is what you should do, and this is what... That's basically, that voice is really the model of philosophy, the philosophical ideas that he's absorbed throughout his life. Now, this week's parashat says, the Yosef way of the Mitzrayim. So what does Rashi say? The Yosef way of the Mitzrayim, why do I have to say single out Yosef, the Yosef way of the Mitzrayim? So Rashi says, who Yosef, Shehoyah ben Mitzrayim, Shehoyah... And he's Yosef Shom Betzitko. Shom Betzitko. Shom Betzitko was in the mice of Potiphar. So what was the mice over there? So Chazal say that really Vayavo Abaisa Lassas Malachto means that he really wanted to do the chet. He wanted to live that. But he heard the Mus Dipno Shalom. He heard the voice of his father. What did he hear? His father said, do you want that your brother's name should be on the ephod and yours not? Yours will be removed. So then he withdrew from him. See, what does it mean to say? It means to say is this, that the people, see, the voice that a person hears in the back of his mind is always the voice of society. It's always the voice of society. The person will be exhausted. So a person will say, back of his mind will say, the problem is you need a vacation. That's the problem. Okay? Very seldom when you hear the voice say, the problem is you didn't learn enough Torah. Very seldom. Usually the problem is you need a vacation, you're working too hard, you have this, all kinds of aitzes. Those aitzes basically, usually, are aitzes, these type of ideas, this group of ideas, usually stem from the society in which a person is raised. Society has a very powerful force. And the norms of this, that's why Chazal say that that's basically the whole idea of Kol Hador Beretz Yisrael, Kilu Yesh Lo Alaka. Kol Hador B'Chutz Loretz, Kilu Ein Lo Alaka. Why in Chutz Loretz? It means that a person that lives among the Goyim, it means to say he cannot help himself. But he must absorb that idea of a norm, which he sees all around him, that's been with him from the time. Well, Tom is a youngster and certainly a grown person. This voice doesn't go away, but something always remains with him. And that kind of philosophy that always is playing in the back of his mind is the philosophy of the society. And because it's the philosophy of the society, it's very strong and very powerful, because something that's sanctioned by masses is always assumed to be correct. That's people's nature. Very few people can really buck the power of a society. Very, very few. Most people are the most powerful forces. What society maintains is to be true, he believes. He may even look like he disbelieves, but down deep he really, really affects him. And it affects in ways that he doesn't know. Subtle ways. But essentially, in the back of his mind, he always has those norms. So what the Torah says about Yosef HaTzadik, this week's parsha, the Yosef Foyer the Mitzrayim, who Yosef Shoyer Roach on over, who Yosef Shoyer the Mitzrayim, who Yosef Shoyer the Tzitko, what it means is that Yosef HaTzadik never really lost, in the back of his mind the philosophical voice of his father. So if you have a bais of Lassus Malachdo, Yetzirah had a powerful attraction. The most powerful attraction possible. The most powerful area in human nature possible. But before he committed the faith, the true philosophical voice of his father represented itself. And what did it say? It said, do you want your name to be removed from the ephod? It means, what is the ephod? It says, the Evayu Aliba Devoya Lakodesh. It means these names represent the true perfection of man. So, the true ideal of what is perfection played before his eyes. And once he saw that, you see, the true philosophical voice, he wasn't able to succumb to hate. That means that Yosef, that's what it means that Yosef fighting his mind. It means he never lost the philosophical voice of that he had when he was a Roi Tzon by his father. In spite of the fact that he was in the Mitzrayim, lost all those years, all alone, it still never gave him the voice of society. That's basically what the pasuk is calling. Okay, it's a universal. There's frustration. The question is, is there frustration in learning? Because more person learns, more person sees, he doesn't know. So he keeps on learning in order to try to fill that void. No, the truth of the matter is that when a person really sees how much he doesn't know, it's worthless. It's fruitless to try to fill that void. The void is too great. It's an impossible. But as a matter of fact, in Yadis, it's a strange thing in Yadis. In Yadis, happiness comes to a person when he totally gives up. That's when he becomes happy. As long as a person is learning because he wants to achieve a certain level of perfection in learning, as long as a person wants to achieve a certain level in learning, he's not learning lishma. He's learning for different reasons. He's learning for the same reasons that society has taught him to involve himself in any particular pursuit, which is to achieve a certain excellence. That's what society says. Why is it? Because, as a matter of fact, somebody told me a person was an Amoritz. Ask me, he had a chava that sits and learns. The dentist, but he had a chava that sits and learns. He says, what is he learning for? He's not a scholar. In the world, learning is only of a value because a person who's a scholar is going to have a title, then he should learn. But if you're going to learn, you're not going to get anywhere. It's a worthless activity. What kind of ego satisfaction are you going to gain from the learning? That's that's the value of the society. It's again a value of the society. The reason why a person is frustrated is because he has a false value of this society. This society sounds like it's a good society, but the truth of the matter is that it is based completely on false values. Completely on false values. It's just an innocuous society. But it's not really in any way a society that reflects any kind of perfection at all. Because it's not thought out. The frustration that a person experiences in learning, why should a person, there shouldn't be any frustration at all in learning. Learning should be an act totally of pleasure. Because if a person sees he doesn't understand something, it's very enjoyable. Because he has gained insight. He's gained insight into the fact that he thought he knew something, and he sees he doesn't know it. That should be a moment of joy, that a person has removed the false notion from his mind. What could be more enjoyable? What could be more beneficial for a person than removing a false notion? The most beneficial thing in the world. I made a mistake. Can you imagine if a person thought he was going for an operation, and he found out that he doesn't need the operation? I mean, would he say, would he be upset? I mean, would he be upset? He doesn't need it? He made a mistake? He lacked knowledge? He'd be full of joy. Because the fact is that whenever a person removes a false idea, it's something which means he's closer to the truth. So why should he be frustrated? A person fully understands the tasteless and finds that he doesn't understand the tasteless, he should be more simple. More simple. Very happy. I thought I knew the Rambam. I said, I made a mistake. The Rambam doesn't work out. He's very happy. And then if a person is, if God helps him to find the Svara, and he does understand it, so he certainly should be more simple. There shouldn't be any frustration in the process of learning. The only frustration a person has in learning is to learn Shalom Shema, which means to say he learns a book of learning. And the truth of the matter is, when a person reaches a level, the more a person learns, the more a person realizes he doesn't know, As a matter of fact, he reaches a point where it becomes so hopeless that he knows he can never really ever know anything. But that's when he's really happy, because that's when he learns. His learning is totally for one reason, because this is the only thing that's worthwhile doing. That's worthwhile. He finally accepts reality. He's free from all these burdens. These burdens he placed upon himself for no reason at all. The burdens are gone. That's it. Now he can enjoy himself. Now he can learn. He'll never know anything. As strange as it sounds, the happiness according to the artist is attained when a person reaches the level that in this society would be the most frightening thing to reach. A person to realize he's a total failure, that would be the worst thing that could happen to him. That's the best thing that could happen to him. The reason why we can't fathom such a thing is because of the fact, I mean, that we're raised in a society. We don't have the Gnus Diukna Shel Yaakov Avinu. Yosef was Mitzrayim. Yosef was very fortunate. He was Mitzrayim, but first he was already told by his father. But we're in America, but we don't have anything from before. We just have the Gnus Diukna Shel Esau. Yes? It's a deeper understanding of what the Gnus Diukna means. It's not simply just a conscience. Okay. I mean, there's no question that the process involved conscience as well. I mean, there's no question about that, but it's more than that. It's not just a guilt. We don't determine. I mean, one of the reasons why historians, for instance, cannot understand Yadis, they can't understand Tillem, and they start saying all kinds of crazy ideas about our Kisvei Kodesh, is because they come from a society where good and evil is determined by conscience. You see? And in Yadis, that's not the case. In Tillem, that's not the case. In Dovra Malach, it's a different phenomenon. I think I mentioned a while ago that in Yadis, the good is the eternal. The evil is the temporal. It's a different definition of good and evil. To the world, good and evil is simply a matter of emotions, conscience. If your conscience bothers you, let your conscience be your guide. That's nonsensical, because that depends on the society you're raised in. You have different societies, if you don't kill somebody, you feel very guilty, like the mafia. If you don't kill somebody, it's a matter of honor, your conscience will bother you. Conscience is determined by society. That is not a guide. The guide is the ideas of the guide. And the good is the eternal. That's Yadus' definition of good and evil. The good is the eternal and evil is the temporal. Okay. While we're on the subject of the society, the influence of society, I want to mention that today we're in a situation where we find many kashas are lost against the territory. Somebody not too long ago was kind enough to give me a whole list, an entire list of kashas. And it's a serious problem. It's a very serious problem that we face. Okay. So the kashas that are asked in today's world are kashas that, for instance, the equality of man and woman. That's a very big catch. The quality of the Gentile and the Jew. Okay? How does Yadus treat an apikoros? How does Yadus treat apikorsim? Finally, the Rambam is serious, treating very serious. Disturbs people today. Very disturbing. What I want to say is like this. This is a tragedy. The tragedy is from the fact that in our days there's been a proliferation of translations of the words of our Chazal and the words of, by Chazal I mean Chachomeinu, the final bracha from the time of the Talmud, the Mishnah, the Talmud, straight through to the Rishonim and the Achronim, straight through. Because of translations. Translations have caused a lot of problems. You know, the Chazal say that there's a Tainus that we had when they translated the Tirgum HaShivim. They translated the Tirgum HaShivim. Chespetavis. Leif Deftavis. Tainus because of the translated the Septuagint. Translated the Bible. The Greek, into Greek. So any other nation would be overjoyed. Oh, this is the sacred book, and everybody's interested in knowing about it. But Chazal saw it differently. Gemara says it was 3 days of Kosher Chofelo. Okay. Why? Because it means that the Torah now was out of control. and that anybody can take a look at the Torah, and he's going to pass judgment on it with his preconceived notions. And it turns out, unfortunately, that in Yadus, in order to understand certain things in Yadus, essential things in Yadus, you have to have there are certain prerequisites. And if a person approaches the Torah with a mind that is distorted, it is impossible, almost impossible, to remove the distortion. And that's why Chazal really kept Torah Shebal Peh well guarded and hidden, and they did not disclose it to the masses, because the masses will not be able to understand it, and they'll definitely misconstrue it. Okay? And I don't want to go through all the Chazal that, that this person gave me a whole list of Chazal. I find myself in a difficult position, because I know that mentioning some of these Chazal, I am quite certain that people will not be able to go beyond, because of their emotional background and their distorted values that we have from this society. It's not intentional. It's just something which is very difficult for a person to extricate himself from. Is that when they hear the Chazal, they're immediately going to be fastened to a certain idea. You're not going to be able to remove it from their mind. It'd be like a child that tells a parent that they want ice cream. They say, I know you're not going to give it to me. And the parent says, but I can't give it to you for a reason. The reason will never register. I knew you would. That's the situation we're in today. So it's difficult. I don't want to even go through a lot of these Chazal, but I want to just take a few examples. One or two examples, maybe. All right? Anyone that thinks that in Yadus a woman is placed on an inferior status has to, of necessity, either be a person that's vicious or else that they're totally ignorant. One of the two. Because in Yadus, the way the system of Torah we have, it's impossible to make such a statement. I mean, the Imos stand out immediately as proof that what the Torah thinks of what an Isha is. Of course, in the beginning, the Rav mentioned, the Pasuk says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when the Kadosh Baruch Hu created man, the Tzelem Elokim bara also, Zachar Nekeva Baram. Which means, if you say Zachar Nekeva Baram, that they both made the Tzelem Elokim, it's impossible that one should be inferior to the other. But they could Tzelem Elokim. There is a mistake in this society, which is based on the idea that the false notion in society that the ostentatiousness is a good. People are convinced that if they would become famous, that they would achieve a great good. And Yadus happens to hold that a person that is famous is not in any way, not only is he not in any way better off than a person that is not famous, but he is in fact worse off. He's a fabulous. Not only pitfalls. What is it? We have a tefillah. We have an interesting tefillah that we recite. The tefillah is, it's such a beautiful tefillah that we attach it to the Shemoneh Esrei, the end of Shemoneh Esrei. Elokein, Yitzor L'shoni Meiro, Slosan Midaben Memo. Okay? That means the recognition of the fact that man's evil takes place through his verbalizations, through his speech. Speech is the instinctual in man. Okay, an animal's instinctual is an action. Man is through speech. Satisfies all his instincts. His ego, his desire for etzicha, his sexual desires, everything goes through his speech. Speech is the medium through which all his instincts are satisfied. Elokein etzor l'shoni meiro. That's the first concept. Etzor l'shoni meiro. That's why Lashon Hara is such a horrible thing. That's why what the world considered harmless gossip, Yadus considered the worst evil. Worst evil. That's the first part of it. Then after that is, Lankalalai Nafshi Sidon. Okay? Means that those who curse me, my soul should be silent. Which means to say that no matter how much people, it means literally if an entire society curses me, that I will be quiet. What does that mean? That's not a matter of fame, it's a matter of infamy. But nevertheless, we say that that's the level that a person should be on. That he doesn't care. He's not concerned about what the society says. And as long as he knows that he's walking in the path of the Rebbeinu Shlomo, that's enough for him. He doesn't need anything more. Nafshi Sidama, she doesn't, I'll not say a word. The Nafshi Ke'ofol HaKol Tiyah. And my soul should be to everyone like dust. Really? Unbelievable truth. What does it mean? It means to say that a person should really want one thing. Just to be alone in the world of reality. And not care about anyone. No matter, it shouldn't affect them whatsoever. Nafshi Ke'ofol HaKol Tiyah. You know Chazal said? Chazal said David HaMelech was, when David HaMelech was persecuted, he wasn't just persecuted by people that were evil. Even the Gedolim of the generation condemned him. Okay? But he didn't care. Didn't bother. To be mispalel in a tefillah like that shows the ultimate level of a person being in the world, not of society, but of reality. That means that I should be like dust. What does it mean? It means that a person who really desires that, who really doesn't care, it doesn't disturb them, no matter what people say about him, then that is the basis. A person has to have that desire to be able to withstand, to be satisfied and happy, even though nafshi ke'ofa lakoltia, he's totally happy. As a matter of fact, if that would occur, that would drive him more towards learning Torah and keeping mitzvahs, because then he could do it totally lishma. And it's a pasuk. Mor Hashem al kachash yom imach. Kim Hashem ratzei tov. Atnei alachasim alakach. Atnei alachasim alakach. Atnei alachasim alakach means that a person should be a tenua in the way that he serves God. Private serving God should be a totally private affair. That's why there's a halacha of nechzi kiyuhal. Moshe says in his tshuva, on blended whiskey, he says it's mutter, but he says, personally, he's machner. Because they're very secrets. But nevertheless, Barabim, he says, he always drinks a little bit of blended whiskey. It's merzikiyura. Merzikiyura means, it takes away. Merzikiyura means, it's not just merzikiyura for the other person. Merzikiyura is a psul in yourself. When a person is in a dangerous situation, where he does something that appears that he's a holy person. He's a tzaddik. Dangerous. The perfected individual is atznei alechas and alechas. And the truth of the matter is that this ideal of God, this exact opposite of society's ideal, you're a spowl for it. A person is a spowl for it. It means that this ideal of Yadus, which is the highest ideal, I mean, Atznei Alechas and Lekechas, what the Navi says, the ultimate level that a Kodesh Baruch Hu demands from a person. Okay? This level was really given to a woman more than to a man. Okay? Because that's why the Gemara says, the Pasuk says, Kol Kavudah Basmelech Kanima, is speaking about Knesset Yisrael. And that's why there was never such a thing as a Bas Mitzvah. Because of that ideal. Because woman represents that ideal. More than a man. That's Ayesar Eshtecha Hinevaal. That's what Chazal said. Now the truth of the matter is that in a distorted society, instead of realizing this is a perfection, this will be viewed on the contrary. You're taken away from us. Now, in our system, it's the highest level. And as a matter of fact, you see from this week's parsha, that Moshe Rabbeinu refused to leave his ohel, so to speak. He refused. He didn't want to be the one that's in the foreground. He wanted to be Atznei Alechas and Alekecha, but I don't think that Kodesh Baruch Hu didn't command to do it. And the person that's really a tzaddik, the Vilna Goyim, on the Vilna Goyim, you could say Hinev Ohel. Yaakov Ishtom, Yoshev Ohel. What does that mean? That means that the highest perfection for man is attained not in public, not when he's in the public eye, but on the contrary, Atznei Alechas and Alekecha. That's the perfection. The Gemara says in Yuma that from the Pasuk Gemara quotes that the Pasuk speaking about Ishim, about the things of Lashon Pasuk, it talks about the Pasuk talks about Ishim and women. The Gemara says it's referring to Talmid HaChacham, because Ishim is it's Lashon Isha and Ish. So the Gemara says, who is this pasuk discussing? Pasuk discussing Talmid Chacham, and why? Because they're really like Nashim and Osim Gvura Kanashim. It means to say the Talmid Chacham was Nimshal to an Isha. And Isha really was, she was given that perfection of representing that idea. And in truth, historically, you see that it's not necessarily given to a woman per se. Sometimes a woman will find herself in a situation where she has to act out the role of a man. The role of a man. For instance, by Esther. Esther originally didn't want to go in front of Noah. So she tried to avoid it with every possibility. She was playing her role as an Isha. But then the situation arose where she really had to, on a contrary, she had to engineer a whole plan in order to save Paul Yisrael. So she switched roles. Devorah, in her time, switched roles. An Isha, sometimes an Isha has to take on the role of a man, but that's only in certain situations. You see, and you see, Yad is recognizing. It's Megillas Esther. It's not Megillas Mordechai. It's Megillas Esther. The perfection of a woman demands that at certain times she recognizes that she can't remain the all hell and she has to move out of the all hell. And Yadis endorses that. It's just on the whole. The plan of Yadis is the one that has to leave the all hell on the whole is a man because his nature is more in line with accomplishment in that area in general. A woman's nature is less in line with being able to accomplish in that area, and that's why she doesn't leave that state of perfection. But to say that Yadis maintains that a woman is inferior is an absolute absurdity. I mean, you see, for instance, in this country, the reason is, I can tell you right away, the reason is the moment, and it's even found among Talmidei Chacham, what I mean, people who learn Torah today, okay? They also sense a certain superiority of the male. But this feeling that they have is no different than the feeling that the rest of society has. And we know one claw. When you have the feeling, you know there's one. So anything which is in line with that feeling knows it. Basically, the society is a society which what is the image of the society? The image of, what does it mean when it says, come into home, I like nushing. What does it mean? It means the opposite of the macho image. Exactly what it means. You have to translate it to close tone. That's what it means. So our ideal is the opposite of what the macho image is of this society. Because the society is just based on shallow emotions. Now, for instance, I'll give you an example. There were three people that died the highest level of death. Which was Meshuggah. One of them was a woman. Miriam and Aviyah. Okay? So it means to say that no man ever reached that level. Which means Rabbi Akiva didn't reach that level. No man ever reached that level. Die in the Aryabay Meshuggah was only Moshe and Aramir. So could we say that a society holds that a woman is a low person when in our system the one of the three people that reached the highest level of Misa was an Isha, and no one, not even the greatest men of the Tzaddikim Esther, has ever reached that level? How can anybody say that? It's an impossibility. It's false. It's an impossibility. The only reason people say it is because they have these false notions, and the moment they see something in the Torah, which in their superficial and shallow approach seems to be in line with something they're looking for, they immediately point to it and they say, ah, you see, there's a prejudice. That's the problem. That's why I say the problem in today's world is that a lot of knowledge of Yadus is being presented to the masses of people, and they see certain things, and immediately it catches their fancy, and they draw conclusions. I'll give you an example. There's one, somebody asked me this question. It's a good question. We have a tefillah. Get me a cheskel. Yeah, for somebody to please. We have a tefillah like this. We have a tefillah. So when I say the society, I mean even the yeshiva world society. Even in the yeshiva world, fellows in the yeshiva will feel that really Yadus maintains a disappearance. Okay? Yeah. And it's based upon the same emotion. The moment a person feels something's right, immediately knows it's right. The We have a tefila. We have a tefila in Vehu Rachum. Now you say every Monday and Thursday. Okay. Vehu Rachum. What is Vehu Rachum? There's really three parts to Vehu Rachum. Three tefillas of Vehu Rachum. The last part is a tefila where it talks about the first part talks about Middash. And then there's two ideas here. Middash, and then the second one is the troubles that the Jews have being among the nations in Golos. Okay? And it's like this. Al Tishkachinu Netzach, it talks about it's asking God, pleading that God should redeem us. Kusa Hashem Aleinu Be'eretz Yivninu. Al Tishkoch Aron Fa Aleinu. Kenachna Amcha B'nei Evri Secha. Kael Habita Dal Kvodinu Bagoyim. Is God look how downtrodden we are, our low esteem among the nations. Vishiktsunu ketuma sanidah. Okay? It means that they have despised us. Hem shiktsu osanu ketuma sanidah. Ketuma sanidah. Wow, we're not saying about that. It's looking at if one of these widows is really the racham, have a serious problem. Ketuma sanidah? So neither is the worst thing, so what are we saying? So immediately we're going to say that Yadis holds that a woman becomes a nida because she's on a low level, and that's why she becomes despised, because she's a nida. So every month a woman is despised, and it shows you the lowliness of a woman. But that's the low esteem that qualities that the Yadis has for women. Okay? So the Tashuva, she's going to become a nida. Right? I just want to show you that the reason that anybody asks this question is because they have no idea whatsoever about what that means. But immediately to their mind, they're going to associate to something. And they're going to be convinced that this is what it is. It's prejudiced against women. Okay? Yeah. First of all, if you want to talk about Tumah, Tumah Sanida is not really Tumah Chamura. Tumah is Mochamur. It should be Tumah Sanais. You want to talk about the worst Tumah, Tumah Sanais. And the truth of the matter is that Tumah itself, Tumah, the person that concludes, and this is the danger is drawing conclusions from Halacha. Of a philosophical nature without understanding Allah, like Tumah. People think Tumah is uncleanliness. It's uncleanliness. There's no translation for Tumah. Truth of the matter is that if you, in English translation should be a big blank over there, because the concept doesn't exist in our society. Isn't that such thing? If you're going to say Tumah is something that's a terrible thing, it's a terrible thing, Tumah, so then why is it that a guy can't become Tumah? Funny thing. A dog can't become Tumah. People always afraid. You see my dog, they say, how you allowed to have a tummy in the house? And I explain to them very quickly that they are tummy in the dog is dog. So tumah, halacha, if a person doesn't know halacha, they draw false conclusions because they see something that they think is identified with some primitive notion in their mind, and immediately they draw conclusions. Tumah is something you can't translate what Tumah is. Tumah is halacha. The only thing to say about Tumah is that Tumah has one purpose, like the Rambam says in the Moreh Avochim. The purpose of Tumah is that a person should not be able to go in the Beis HaMikdash all the time. That's what it is. Okay? That's the purpose of Tumah. You want to associate some kind of feeling with it? You can't associate. There's no feeling you can associate with it. It's a halacha. Purely abstract halachic phenomena. It doesn't show the status of a person. It has nothing to do with it. You want it to, it is. There is one concept associated with a lichot, because tumah, the purpose of tumah is that a person shouldn't be able to be in the mikdash all the time. And so there's no issue to become tumah, except for tanya, because the tanya is tied to avodah mikdash. But a regular person has nothing wrong in becoming tumah. Doesn't become tumah, doesn't become tumah all his life. You want to be less of a tumah? Yes. So the shiktsunu ketumah sanida sounds like a terrible thing, but the first question again you have to ask is, if she says shiktsunu ketumah sanais, why is it ketumah sanida? What's the answer? The answer is that tefillahs are based on something. It's based on a possible. Because our tefillahs, we don't have too much confidence in ourselves. We feel that tefillah, which is omer l'fnei Hashem, is something that's very, very difficult for a person. One thing about Yad is always being very careful with how they relate to God. How they refer to God, relate to God, that is the most dangerous area. Because if that area, if you're wrong in that area, then you're wrong your whole life. Because your whole life revolves around that one idea. The Chazal is very careful how the words that they use in the Tzula. It was 120 Chachamim and Behem Kam and Nevi'im took the Tzula. And you see, when they were in the second Tzula, it's all based on Pesukim. Because they were afraid to say things. The person says something, he doesn't know if he's on the level. Perhaps there's something tainted in his mind. He doesn't have the true idea, the clear perception. So they relied on Pesukim. As much as possible, they relied on Pesukim. This Vishiktun Ketumas Anin is a Pasuk. It's a Pasuk in Yecheskel. Yecheskel Lamed Vav. The Pasuk says, Ben Adam, Yudayim, Ben Adam, Beis Yisrael Yoshim Alad Masan. Beis Yisrael are living on the land via Kamarosa, the Darkom of Alilosa. Ketumas Hanido, Hoysa Darkom of Manar. Okay? So Tumah is used as a mushroom. Real Tumah, there's no translation for. But Tumah is used as a mushroom of Richo. Ketumas Hanido, Hoysa Darkom of Manar. Why does the Pastor say Ketumas Hanido, Hoysa Darkom of Manar? So Rashi explains. In Shiloh HaKosev Lemido, Shebailo Metzate, Mosai Kito, the Toev Loshevelel. Because the Torah, the mashal is given to a woman as a woman, because in Isha Nida, the mashal is that the husband is waiting for her to become Tohar, the Toev Loshevelel, and he desires to return to her. So it means to say that there's a mashal of Knesset Yisrael and a Kodesh Baruch Hu, that there's a relationship between God and Knesset Yisrael, and the mashal throughout the Nevi'im is a mashal of a Baal to an Isha. Another uses that mashal. So the reason why it says Ketumas Hanido Hoysadak on the phone is because the Navi wants to give wants to convey an idea that as bad as Klal Yisrael is, it's like she's like an Isha. Klal Yisrael is like an Isha, but she's like an Isha Nida, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is waiting for her to become Tahar. That's the reason for the mashal. Okay? It's a beautiful mashal, because the Navi didn't want to say that Klal Yisrael is Meruchah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it's just like a Nida. So it shows Richuk, but Richuk, just like a Nida, the Baal is waiting anxiously for her to become Tahar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is waiting, so to speak, Kaviyachol, for Knesset Yisrael to become Tahar into the Tahar. That's the reason why he uses that mashal to come up Nida. It has nothing to do whatsoever with degradation. On the contrary, it shows on the contrary. It shows that the Isha is desirable. The husband is waiting for her, and it gives that mushal to Klal Yisrael. So something which a person is distorted would take to be as a pejorative, you see, is exactly the opposite. And a person who can do it is exactly the opposite. A beautiful mushal. Okay. That's why, of course, doesn't use Tumas Anais. That's what it says, not Shachas? Yeah, that's correct. That it's prejudicial because of the fact that women sense the prejudice because the people are on the low level of really partaking of the prejudice. Right, they falsely assume that the Torah supports this kind of a thing. Okay? Well, let me tell you this. Rashi's daughter used to answer his tshuvas. Okay? Okay. So I don't think if Rashi's daughter was ever to say that. There's one thing I won't do. I will not answer questions from fact. I can only explain questions from a point of view of what in reality the Torah considers to be true. So for instance, if you'll ask me why was it that there weren't as many women who were knowledgeable of Torah as men, I can't answer such a question. I can only say that in no way does the Torah put down an Isha who has knowledge. And the proof is Devorah. Proof is Devorah that they went to her for the Sanhedrin, went to her and asked her for advice. Any person that has the knowledge we respect. And there were many women, the mother of the Drisha, Paschim Shalas, and the Nafati Paschim, like I was going to talk about the Sanhedrin, Shabbos. But anyways, they didn't put themselves, those women were great women, they didn't put themselves in the forefront, except like Devorah, she had to. But there was nobody, there was no... Yeah, she wanted. Yeah, right. She had Barshi, right. But there was really nobody there. So she basically had to do it. But that's the perfection of women. But I would say that it could be where it's called, it's a practical question. But I would say also that there has to be a demand on the part of the woman for the knowledge. If a person wants to learn, if a woman wants to learn, then she really, truly wants to learn, she'll do it. If she is going to complain that the society isn't getting to her, It's a principle of Yaddis, that there are two types of intuition. One kind of intuition is nothing more than feelings we have about things because we're used to seeing them that way. That kind of intuition is nonsense. Okay? That kind of intuition is nonsense. There's another kind of intuition, which is intellectual intuition. Intellectual intuition, we have the highest respect for. Okay? Intellectual intuition is that which makes a machlokes tanai. That's what a machlokes tanai is made out of, intellectual intuition. Okay? Two kinds of intuition. The Rambam and his Mora explain. One kind of intuition just comes from nonsense, just because a person is still like a person wouldn't believe in that the table is not solid. Basically, it's not solid space. They wouldn't believe it. Nah, I can't believe it. That's common intuition. Common intuition is not. But then there's another kind of intuition, which is intellectual intuition. Intuition that the mind has from studying an area, and it can sense what's right. Certain kind of a person can intuit about an area. A person who's a big physicist has an intuition in physics. You ask him a question, he can sense it. A person who's a Baal Lacha, he knows. He has a sense about Baal Lacha. He can hear a specific, he can't be there. Because he knows a lot. That intuition you respect. Two kinds of intuition. You have to be careful, because most people think that they have that they're experiencing the second intuition, which is really the first. The going on the shocking test. And Ketumas Anido means that it's trying to show you the highest example of Richuk with simultaneously with the greatest desire for return. That's what it's trying to do. Both opposites. That's why it's a perfect muscle. Because Yisrael Ketumas Anido means they're the ones that are acting out what the Pasuk says. They're the ones that are the players and acting out the Richuk of Ketumas Anido that the Pasuk Yecheskel talks about. Metaphorical, yeah. Well, that one person. I know as much as I say it's not going to be a value. I'm going to say it again and again. You cannot draw any kind of inferences from the halachic system. The halachic system has its works in its own orbit. Separate things, separate phenomena. You cannot draw any conclusions whatsoever from the halachic system. Whatsoever. Okay? The Rav gave as an example, say a woman can't be made Aegis. And neither can the Melech HaMashiach. Okay? So that's it. So the Melech HaMashiach is despised also. Halacha works in its own unique way. It does nothing to do. You can't draw philosophical conclusions from halacha. You want to say why it was established? That's philosophy. I mean, why is it that Shmaya and Avtalion that were the teachers of Hillel and Shammai, the greatest Gedolei Ador, why is it that they were really on the they were part of Bali and Masorah, but they couldn't. Would know that that's absurd. So you looked down at Shemaya Fan, but Shemaya Fan couldn't sit on the Sanhedrin. They were the heads of Bali and Masorah, but they could not sit on a Sanhedrin. Why? They could not only sit on the Sanhedrin, let me correct myself. They couldn't be in charge of of the smallest type of thing, a ditch of water, to determine which way it goes. This day this way, and then the other day the other way. They couldn't even do that. Okay? Does that mean that we look at them as inferior? No. It's only a person who has no concept of the system of Yadis would think such a draw such a conclusion. Halacha works in its own framework. It's a different kind of a thing. It's true. But the question that Richard answered this before, I'd like to answer that question. The question is that if we found a society, your question was, we found a society where they don't allow Jews to be in office and to have any kind of position, so then we would assume that society is discriminatory. And yet in Yadus, with regard to women can't participate in a lot of things, so that's why we're going to make the same assumption. That's exactly what I'm trying to tell you. That is precisely what I'm trying to tell you. That in a society, if you found such a society, there'd be no doubt that the reason why they're doing it is that they're discriminating. There's no doubt about it, because their whole value system is just based on emotions. So therefore, why are they doing it? Doing it to hurt you. But in Yadis, you can't draw the same conclusion that you would draw in a regular society. You cannot apply those kind of rules to Allah. Allah is a different system. You have to look into it. You have to look into it. Okay? Yes. Discriminate is not a bad word. But discriminatory is a bad word. This is discrimination. Discriminate and discriminatory. That's right. It would, because if it's a group that are ignoramuses and they have no chachamim, then that is what it's going to lead to. But in our society, in our system, that's not the case. In our system, it's a system of chachamim. And even if a person is not a chacham, he has to be attached to a chacham. He has to have a rav that paskens a shaila. He has to be very closely related to the chacham. And he has to know, he has to chacham. What's going on here? What is this? How is it possible, for instance, in a migdash, you say a kohen is a cripple, can't do avada? What does that mean? Look down at cripples? Person is physically disabled, handicapped. We say we look down at this person, like the Spartans did. I mean, is that the philosophy of the others? But he's possible. So I just want to say, you cannot draw conclusions from halacha. Halacha has its own reason. Why? The Rav wanted to mention, because it's very simple. The purpose of the Migdash was to give a person an experience when he came into the Migdash. Experience a relation, to walk back, to go back home with a certain feeling. That's the whole reason you need a Migdash. You need the base of Migdash for Moshe Rabbeinu. You need the base of Migdash for Kol Yisrael, for the average person. The Yad just realizes that you have to also include the average person. He's not an intellectual, he's not a deep thinker, but he has to be included in the system, and the system of the Ummah. So he came into the Migdash, he was inspired, he walked away with a certain feeling of inspiration. If you walk into the Migdash and you saw cripples handling the Avoda, you know right away it'll be turned off. Any question, walk away or feel safe. Why is it so? It's wrong. But that's the way a person is. And the Migdash, the purpose of the Migdash was for that reason. So that's why Halacha says that a Baal Mum can't do Avoda. Well, does that mean that a Baal Mum is looked down upon? The same Baal Mum could be the God of the door. Okay? Rabbi Meir brought a very good raya. It says, Avas Hashem. Avas Hashem Lekecha. It's a mitzvah for men and women. Now Ram explains, Avas Hashem is Talmud Torah. Right. And now it's a, what do you call it? It's a free. So you see, they're now exempt from mitzvah Avas Hashem. But they're exempt from the mitzvah of Talmud Torah insofar as the responsibility of passing on the Masorah. But personally, they're not exempt from it. That responsibility was given over to men, for a man. Why? Because I explained to you before, on the whole, the nature of man is different than the nature of women. And on the whole, the nature of man is such that he is more successful in the outgoing than a woman is. Even though, as I said before, at specific times, a particular woman might have to change roles. But that's the way the system is, yes. By the way, before you go, we just go here. That's why when Chazal talk about, when the Rambam talks about, Vein Roy Yisrael, Shehim Chachomim Mechukomim. That you always talk about Kol Yisrael, that they are wise and chachamim, and that's why the system will never distort them, because when they're living properly, they are chachamim. Even the ones that aren't such deep theoreticians, but they're still related to chachamim, integrally related to chachamim. And that's why they don't draw the false conclusion. But in this society, it's tragedy, because in this society, they don't have the relationship anymore. It doesn't exist anymore, and the only ideas they have is from the world. And the moment they see something, immediately draw the craziest conclusions. And now that everything becomes available to them, it's a horror. It's terrible. People are very excited about all this, the art scrolls and all this information and the translations. I tell you, they should reinstitute the Ches Patevis. That's my opinion, because it's very nice, but it's going to lead to problems. It has to lead to problems. There are certain Rambams, certain Rambans. Certain things that people are going to have to, Gemaras, that people are going to, of necessity. Just straight over here. This is the person just right away. Without a doubt, they're not going to know what has anything to do with the Pasuk of the Chazal. I can understand the Mashal and immediately say that that's right. There's no way, and what's going to stop them? There's no way to stop them. Okay? And so far as Talmud Torah, personally, Amisha is in the same level. Okay. Yeah, of course, the bracha that somebody asked before, that the bracha of Shlos on Isha, is simply because of the fact that a person shouldn't be of the opinion, most people are of the opinion, the less mitzvahs they have, the more happy they would be. The more happy, the less mitzvahs. Mitzvahs are a problem. They get up in the morning, the first thing they have is after davening, after this, after that. The mitzvahs bother. So Chazal instituted a bracha to show, on the contrary, that a person should have an ava for the fact that he's chayav in the mitzvahs. Especially tefillah, according to Rambam, a woman's only chayav in one tefillah in a day, and it could be a few sentences. So a man gets up in the morning, he has to go to shul, he has to daven, it's a whole big thing. The first thing they tell him is shlos on Isha. On the contrary, that is a schus that he's able to do all the mitzvahs. So that's why he says shlos on a goy, shlos on a yovid. All people that have less mitzvahs than he has. That's the whole idea. It's a simple thing. It's not necessarily a big fetish. But people, the craziest thing. It's absurd how people approach the the two of us. It was such a lack of understanding. It was just an amazing thing. Because the mother, is like a matronusa, like a matron, that that she protects the child. So that's why the Chazal protected the Klal Yisrael through the Gzeres. Protected them from the contrary. See, that's the role. There definitely is no question. I'm not saying that the women and men are equal. I mean, it's two different things. It's two different, they're not the same. They're two different roles that they have. I'm not saying they're the same. They're not the same. They're different. I'm saying they are not unequal. Okay, equal means exactly the same. I don't know. But they're unequal, you see, in terms of their specific goals. But in terms of value, they're equal. Equal has two meanings. Equal can mean in terms of value, equal can mean in terms of identity. Okay? It's not an identity, it's not a mathematical identity. Two different phenomena. In one sense, they're unequal. In other words, they're not the same. They're not identified as the same. Not identity. But they're equal in value, they're not unequal. Value, they're equal. That's what I'm saying. But the role of a woman and a man is totally different. You see, the Ovos and the Imos. The Ovos had one role, the Imos had another role. Like the Rav one time mentioned, you see, by Yitzchak and by Rivka. Now, what did Yitzchak gave over Birkas Avram to Yaakov? And what did Rivka do at the same time? She sent him away. The mother is the one that guards the child. She played a role. She saved his life. She saved him. That was her role in establishing. That was her role in establishing Shiftei Kol. That was in establishing Klal Yisrael. Cannot minimize such a role. There's two different activities that are necessary for establishing Klal Yisrael, and each one had to play their role. Now, it's impossible to say in terms of which one is more important. Without either one, you wouldn't have it. The Rav, as a matter of fact, mentioned a beautiful thing. He says that you see by Avram Avinu that Avram Avinu produced Yitzchak. Yitzchak was the one that carried on, and it had to be Dafka Chusal. It had to be Chusal. Had to be Chusal. Hagar was Yishmael. But it was necessary for Yitzchak to result from both Avram and Sarah. Sarah just as much as Avram. And if you have any sensitivity to Torah, and as you really say, I mean, this is the ingenious sensitivity of the Rav, is if you take a look at Chaye Sarah and you see where Avram Avinu buried Sarah, you see after that, it's clear, he lives on. He lives on after that. But after that, his role as establishing, insofar as establishing the nation is over. It's a private life. It continues with a private life. But his life, and so that's what I said a little about. His life, insofar as establishing Christ, was only as long as he was with Sarah. And after Sarah died, he lived on as a private individual. Yes, except a different role of it. Shows it's just as important. Sarah was just as important as Avraham Avinu for establishing, to bring about Yitzchak equality of Sarah. Miriam was the one that saved the whole nation. She brought about Moshe and Shal Yisrael. She argued with her father and with her mother, and she was right. She was right. To say that the Torah looks down upon a woman is nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. It's just in this distorted society where the only value is being in the limelight, you'll come to that conclusion. If you have any depth of understanding, you see immediately that it's false, incorrect, false. Yes. I mean, I feel uncomfortable talking about them, I say, even here, not because I don't know that they're correct, and there's no doubt in my mind about what they're about. But the only thing is, I know if I bring them up, I know people are definitely going to jump to the false conclusion, because there's certain things in this society, certain prejudices in this society, that we have because of the society. I'll give you an example. Capital punishment. And capital punishment is something which would seem, to anyone in this society, would seem brutal. Malchus would seem brutal. I mean, how could you do this? I mean, it's not right. It's not right. To give Malchus to a person, it's not right. I mean, physical corporal punishment is something which is distasteful in the modern man. A modern man is very distasteful to him, but it's not distasteful to him to let a person rot in a cell for the rest of his life. That doesn't bother him at all. Because he didn't do anything to touch him. Okay. Truth of the matter is, there's no question about it, that Malchus is a much better system than prison. Prison is something which destroys people. There's no improvement. And Malchus is a momentary thing, and then the person's right back in society. And it doesn't destroy his life. And it's a very good deterrent. It's a better deterrent than prison. But the fact is that modern man considers himself, he has a certain type of false sophistication, and he thinks that he's, I wouldn't touch another person, it's Sadagama, I wouldn't cross the show. and put him in jail and let him decay for the rest of his life? I didn't do that. That's a false. Yes, sure. To kill him is okay. The electric chair, that way is okay. But to beat him is a terrible thing. Somebody can explain to me rationally what the difference is. But the truth of the matter is that the prison system is the worst system in the world. The prison system leads to more corruption and all the problems that are linked to it. And the burden on society and everything else. And the truth of the matter is, it's distasteful to instill any kind of punishment for a person. Nobody wants to do that. Unfortunately, in a society, it has to be done. Unless you're going to have people killers, ruthless people, destroying their innocent lives, then if you have a stop to it. But what modern society doesn't realize is that you have to have a realistic approach. Which is the best method? Not go by your feelings. I didn't go to my hands. I didn't do anything. Any kind of person suffering, I said, well, yeah, I don't see him. He's over there. Doesn't bother me. That is not a But if I would talk about something like this, forget it. You don't have a chance. You can't even argue such a point in today's society. No one's going to sit down and argue with you rationally which system is better. They just won't hear it because it's something which is there's tremendous prejudice against, and that's it. Okay, it's a topic that's not—it's a distasteful topic. I agree, it's a distasteful topic, but it doesn't mean that we shouldn't use our minds and rationality and handling it in the best possible way. And it doesn't mean just because you feel good about the way you punish the person that means that in fact is a better punishment. That has nothing to do with it. You know what I'm saying? I'm just giving an example of something that you can't talk about in today's society, certain things, okay? Yes. The reason why I mention this is because somebody cited an instance in the Rambam where the Rambam mentions that there's that force should be, physical force should be used in the case of a woman who's negligent in her obligations. First of all, the Raiva disagrees, others disagree, but the point is this. Again, they've taken a case where in the Rambam, and it's totally misunderstood. Why? Because in today's society, you see, marriage is nothing more than love. That's it. Which means to say, if a person gets married and suddenly they're not in love anymore, so that's it, they just walk out of the house. The kids, the family, doesn't matter. Doesn't mean anything. That's because the society has no concept of responsibility and obligation. Whereas in Yadus, that's not the case. Marriage is a certain, love is very nice, but it's a certain responsibility. It's a mature decision on the part of an individual to be a responsible person and to be married to someone. There's certain responsibilities and to raise a family. And you can't just say, somebody came to me, was not too long ago. They said, they're not in love with the husband anymore. I said, fine. So what is that? But the point is, in this society, that's it. Not in love, I'm not in love, that's it. I go out and I can destroy the family knowing the kids are being ruined, doesn't matter. The halacha doesn't look at it that way. Halacha has a different opinion. A person's emotions are very important, but it's not as simple as that. So the Rambam, they quote the Rambam, but the Rambam says that force can be employed in a woman, if a woman's supposed to fulfill her obligations. First of all, they were taught lamaratzim, because the force that was talking about was with regard to a woman doing fulfilling her obligations. Because in Chazal, it was a system. If the man made the money, and the woman had to take care of this, it's jobs. It's a responsibility. It's not just a game, it's responsibility. The husband is chayev to support his wife, and the wife is chayevus to do certain acts. She has a certain responsibility. It's not any less than the man's work. It's not any more. It's a different role. There was a division of labor. A division of labor. You have to have a family, there has to be a division of labor. It's a logical thing in the eyes of Chazal. It's not just a game. In the very world, the marriage is like a game. So therefore, if one fails to fulfill their responsibility, so Bezin forces. Now, whether Bezin can use physical force or not is a machlokas rishonim, okay? But I want to show you something. The question was raised, how can it be possible to use physical force for a woman to fulfill her obligation? First of all, they take one case and I'm going to understand the case. Well, the halacha is that if a woman doesn't want to fulfill these obligations, she has a right not to. She gets an open gemara. Yecholo isha loma labayla eni nizunis v'eni yosef. Which means, I don't want to do these jobs that you have for me, and don't support me. I'll support myself. So she doesn't have to do this. Okay? Besides, the Rambam is the one that maintains that a woman, if she wants to, can get divorced whenever she wants to, if she says that she finds her husband absolutely intolerable. She can go to Bezdin and say, I find the man absolutely intolerable, and Bezdin will force the husband, and they will use physical force to give a get. So why is physical force okay when Besdin forces the husband to give a get? Then I don't hear any complaints about the physical force. But if they force the woman to fulfill her obligations, then it's a terrible thing. So what I'm trying to show you is a Rambam that ordinarily I would hate to have to publicly try to explain that Rambam, because you know why? Because the moment the person sees the Rambam, immediately that's it. They see red. Immediately this is it, because prejudice. They don't look at the system of halacha. System of halacha. It's okay to force them. When a man doesn't want to give a get, I've never had any complaints. We know it even happens in America, that they take the guy and they beat him up and they force him to give a get, and everybody says wonderful. Okay. So why is it different? Why is it different? The answer is because the people approach the halacha with misconceived. They don't know the system, first of all. They don't know what the system is. They're looking at one thing which catches their fancy, and they're convinced that there they found the thing that they've been looking for. And this system doesn't lend itself to such a superficial evaluation. Yes. Besdin forces them, not the husband. Besdin forces them. As a matter of fact, they say if there's continued problems around them, so they send somebody down from Besdin to observe what's going on. It's Besdin, not the husband. Has no right to touch his wife. Never does. There's no other, first of all, there's no halacha ever that a husband has a right to lift a finger on his wife. On the contrary, the halacha is that a husband has to treat his wife with more respect than his own self. But and that's an open Rambam. That Rambam nobody talks about. But anyways, the force over there is only under the condition that it's an injustice. That if she's being paid for her wages, it would be like a person that's taking money for wages and refuses to do the work. If she says, I don't want to do the work and don't support me, there's nothing wrong that she has a right to do that. A woman can say, look, I'm a working woman, I support, you don't have to give me my food, I don't need $100 a week, whatever it is, keep it yourself. I don't need a big lick, and I make my own money. So if that's the case, she's entitled to it. There's nothing wrong with it. It's only under a situation where it's an injustice. But she's taking the money, she's living a very good life, and she refuses to live up to her responsibilities. And it's only the Rambam, the rabbit says it's never. Okay. But anyway, but I'm just saying, even according to the Rambam, it has to be understood in the framework of the halachic system. In the framework of the halachic system, if a man refuses to build a sukkah, so Besdin is kosher, they force him physically, atcha techen atcha, if he continues to refuse. Why is that any different? Why is that okay? That's not the woman with a single lad, it's crazy. It's crazy, it's insane. It's so insane that they even talk about it. Okay. Yes. There's another chazal I'm going to give you. It's a tough one. It's a tough one, and immediately you'll jump when you hear it. But again, I'm doing it because I want you to understand. And I'm telling you, I'm very ill at ease in presenting this. I'm very ill at ease in presenting this because of the fact that I know that we are raised in a certain society. We're going to have certain reactions because of that fact. Okay? There's a Gemara that says. Okay. There's a Gemara that says that a woman is a pot of filth with blood at the neck, and everybody runs after her. Okay? That sounds pretty good. Okay. Interesting shit today, huh? So, immediately you draw a conclusion that this is that's a degradation of the woman. Truth of the matter is that chazal happens to be a degradation for man, not for woman. What the chazal is saying is something that Sigmund Freud said 2,000 years later. See, you have to understand something. The chazal speak in different frameworks. Chazal talk about different things. Chazal spoke about, they were conversant in the medicine of their times. They spoke about psychology. They had interests in many different areas. All kinds of things. Even sexual areas. The Gemara investigates thoroughly. And some of the Gemaras sound strange to people. They were interested in all kinds of phenomena. There was no phenomena that was too low or too base for them to investigate. That's the kind of attitude they had. But we come from a different kind of society. We come from a Christianized society where certain information you don't talk about, or people do, people start laughing, snickering. Why? And why do they start snickering? Why is it different? Any phenomena, any kind of phenomena, sexual phenomena, anything is all part of the scheme of creation. It's there. It means that it's in God's plan. So every activity can be traced to some kind of a source in nature, and nature is a part of the scheme of God's purpose. So why should it be inferior? The answer is because of a certain attitude that Goyim had. It's essentially a Goyish attitude. But we as Jews never had, and that's why you find Chazal, that people, I remember there's one time I came across Gemara, so I'll tell you honestly, that it can't bother me. You know, there's an emotion, that's it. What that Chazal was talking about is the fact that the sexual instinct is such, Chazal was interested in psychology, the sexual instinct is such that the most disgusting action can be, a person will go after with the greatest lust and desire. And yet, at another moment later, and when he's not involved in that, it'll be the most disgusting thing. That's what Chazal is. It's not that significant words. Okay. It happens to be a psychological truism. Chazal were interested in psychology. That's exactly what they mean. Because if you take a look at it, when it says that a woman is, it describes the woman, pot of filled with blood, and everybody's running after her, who is running after her? The man is running after her. It's not talking about the personality of the woman, it's not talking about the telling or the key, it's talking about the man, the fact, and it's saying essentially that a man is essentially of such a nature. A woman is not to that degree. The Gemara says, who has a greater sexual desire? A man. The Gemara says, how do you know? You take a look at Churchill's illness. Prostitution. Who hires who? Okay? So, you see, Chazal held, you can learn an idea from the prostitutes, street of prostitutes, Churchill's illness. They learned ideas from every area. There was no area that was not a source of knowledge for them. So what Chazal was saying is the nature of man is, happens to be a deprecation of man. The nature of man is that something which he will admit is the most disgusting thing, nevertheless, in the passion of sexuality, it will be something which is the most desirous for him. Which shows you the strength of the sexual instinct and its ability to overcome even something which emotionally goes against the person. Why did Chazal say that? It's an important piece of knowledge. Because if a person realizes that, he understands that there's a force within himself that's completely irrational, and therefore maybe a person will be in a situation of a avera, will be able to realize that there's something driving me, this force is crazy that's driving me. And yet I'm starting to think that it's reality, there's something wrong here. Chazal, it's important for man to know this. It doesn't say it about a woman insofar as a man. It's a deprecation of man, because man's taiva is greater than woman's. So something which is not understood, the framework is not understood. When you see the statement, if you are looking for something there that's in your distorted value system, is your impression is that it's a deprecation of woman. It's not true, and it happens to be exactly the opposite. Because even though it's true about women as well, but the reason why Chazal used men is because man's taiva is greater. Chazal held that the male's desire for sexuality is greater. That's why the Gemara says that is a difference. If a man refuses sex in a marriage, and a woman refuses sex, it's not as serious. It's serious. They force him to divorce or whatever, but it's not exactly the same system. Not the same system. Because of the fact that the woman's desire is not as great for the physical sexual act as a man's desire is. That's what Chazal said. Okay. I saw a study recently that confirms that. That confirms that fact. Yes. The Gemara is not talking about the value of a woman. It's not talking. It doesn't mean that Sarah Imenu was a lower person. You have any sense? You see right away. It's a psychological phenomenon. Okay, but that's why Gemara is very dangerous, because Gemara is dangerous because people ignoramuses. And if you take a look, historians. The worst thing is the Bible critics and the historians. They have absolutely no knowledge of the depth of Torah, and they draw their absurd conclusions based upon their ignorance, and it's so superficial. It's more than superficial. It's even like it's idiotic and vicious and unfair. Okay, but they refuse to recognize the Chochmas of God. But you see, in our society, everything has to be written in a topic. The Gemara doesn't write, now we're going to discuss the topic of human sexuality. It doesn't write that. The Gemara brings down the members because it's written for Chachmei Yisrael, that they see immediately. This is a different subject. There's another subject. Okay?
You see him during the Torah?
Okay. Yes. Of course, there's a Kol Yodim Kal Lam Nechzal Chupa. It's done in a refined manner. They go where you come and they escort her. But if a person's menavelous piv and he takes that and he degrades it, that whole institution of Achnasas Kala, it's called Achnasas Kala. That's why, because that's the institution. It's called Achnasas Kala. So anyone that takes that refined institution, it's an institution of Kedusha, and reduces it to Nivel Peh, even though he had an advanced 70 good years, he'll be converted 70 bad years. That's what he wanted. So that's why he was a Hanas scholar. A Hanas scholar represents the whole refinement of the institution.
Yeah.
You say, call him a Kaddish Ishim, well, Maisa Kaddish just mentioned, that's not no Kaddish. The last point I'm going to mention is the statement of Chazal of Noshim Daitin Kalos. That's a big one. What it means, what Chazal means is as follows. And Chazal say it, and if people don't like it, it doesn't disturb me, because the point is, if Chazal say it, it means it's the truth. But a person has to be willing to accept the truth. A person cannot. People draw conclusions about psychology based upon the conclusion. For instance, Freud held biology as destiny. You can't know certain theories. Okay? But the women's libbers don't like the theories, so that's why the theories are wrong. In my mind, there's not a way to tell whether something's right or wrong. You want to tell something's right or wrong, you have to investigate to see if it's true. And if certain things are true, if a woman has certain things about her nature, so then that's it. You can't fight reality. What are you going to say? A mouse is as big as a giraffe. I mean, that's it. It's ridiculous. The reality a person must accept. He must investigate. What Chazal being mean by Noshim Daitan Kalos is as follows. It means that every person has a struggle in his life between two worlds. Between the emotional world, the world of the emotions and the feelings, and between the world that they see through their mind's eye, the world of reality. That's the struggle in life. There are always two different images presented before the person. One comes from the world of the emotions, the other comes from the world of thought and the mind. And the struggle in life is for a person to be able to abide by the world of his mind, the world of Chokmah, in spite of how powerful the world of the emotions is. And it's very powerful. Okay. All the Gemara says, what the Gemara means is by Noshim Daitan Kalos, it means precisely that this struggle, you see, by the way, when a person reaches a high level, the struggle's over. The struggle's over. The Gemara says, that's what the Rambam said. The Rambam says that there's two different types of tzaddikim. There's a tzaddik, which is a kovesh yitzro, which means he's in constant conflict, and the tzaddik has reached a level where he's not a kovesh yitzro, but he's osa me'ava. Osa me'ava. Osa me'ava is the highest level. It means a person in a smooth soul. And that's really the objective. That's the objective of Kalat HaRakot, to reach that level of Osa Me'ava. That's the objective. How much, and I said once, a person shouldn't be disappointed, because a person will say, I'll never reach the level of Osa Me'ava, it's a very high level. Ram says, very few people reach it, like a Avon Avinu. The point that I wanted to make was that it's possible to reach it in certain areas, different areas. It doesn't mean it's totally true. It could be an Osa Me'ava with regard to a certain mitzvah, you reach a certain level. So an Osa Me'ava in that area. It doesn't work, it's not a complete jump. It's broken up. In one area you have a struggle, but in another area you reach a plane where you see that on the contrary, you enjoy something which was a difficulty a long time ago. Shabbos may have been a very difficult situation when you were younger, and when you're older you enjoy it. That means that you're an Oved Me'avon, so far as Shabbos is concerned. Okay? So in different mitzvahs and different levels, a person can partake of Oved Me'avon to certain degrees. Of course, Avraham Avinu means his whole essence was Oved Me'avon. That we strive for, but we don't practically think that we're going to achieve it. But nevertheless, we always grapple. All the Gemara means is that Noshim Daitan Kalos. It means that for them, that struggle is a little harder. It means that in certain respects, the struggle is more difficult. It doesn't mean that they're not capable of being successful, and it doesn't mean that when they're successful, their success is equal to a man's success. It means in certain respects, the struggle that a woman has against the world of the emotions in certain areas, because she partakes of certain kind of an emotional nature, the struggle is harder in certain areas. That's all it means. Kalos doesn't mean their minds are weak. It doesn't mean they're unintelligent. It doesn't, because the example the Gemara gives was the case of, if I remember, it was a long time. The case of Yudanus was running away, right? Shemichai's wife, no, Shemichai was running away. And he's afraid that they'd force his wife to catch his wife and they'd force her, torture her, to disclose where he's at. So he said, Noshim Daitan Kalos. What I meant is, that in such a situation, a man can take more punishment before, by nature, before he gives in than a woman can. That's what it means. That in Kellis doesn't mean their minds are weak. It means to say that insofar as the, it's more difficult for them in certain situations to stay on the rational course. Because the pain is the pain, they can't tolerate the pain to that degree. That's the case he gave. The case he gave. It means that the struggle in certain instances is going to be greater for a woman because her emotional makeup in certain areas. Does not mean to say that she's not going to be successful. It just means that everybody has their struggle. Everybody has a struggle. For a man in certain areas, it's in certain areas is more difficult. But it's a different kind of a difficulty. The Gemara is pointing out a certain kind of difficulty that a woman has. It's more difficult in certain instances to stick to the world of the ideas. The world of emotions are more powerful in many areas. In many areas, that's what it means. That was one of the areas that he mentioned. The ability that Gemara is not talking about how intelligent she was. If you look at the Gemara, it's not about how intelligent she was. It just says that the punishment, the physical torture, she won't be able to withstand. And that's the expression he uses. That's the point. You're in the country. No, Bini is, as a matter of fact, Bini Yisera is very much in line with this. Because Bini Yisera means that the same attitude that she has, the same emotional attitude, gives her a certain sensitivity that the man doesn't have. So it's a double-edged sword. And in one sense, in one area, it is very valuable. It is a very valuable tool. The sensitivity of the emotions is a very valuable tool. It was the tool that was responsible for the success of Yitzchak. But on the other side, that same ability causes her to have certain difficulties in other areas. So it's a double-edged sword, and that has to do with a woman's nature. And it's not a put-down of a woman. It is just telling you that her nature is such that there's something that she has which is of benefit. Her emotional, human sensitivity is finer, keener than the man's. And it's true. A woman's sensitivity is much greater than a man's by nature. And because of that, she can perceive certain things that a man can't perceive. But simultaneously, because of that, the struggle against the rational world in certain situations is going to be much more difficult for her. Much more difficult for her. Yes. No, that's true. You happen to be right. When it comes to the area of sexual desire itself, the man is more. It's true. But other areas. I mean, it's an interesting thing. But the Gemara says that it would seem logical that a woman would be harder for her as a lacha by a velus that a person is not allowed to be misabel and definitely. But a person has to be mekabel the reality and go on with their life. I mean, it's a tough halacha, but that's what the law is. It would seem that the monotone, if a person suffers the loss of a child, it would seem that if a woman would be more difficult for her than for a man. It seems that the emotions are much more, much stronger and more difficult. But it's interesting. Gemara says in Bar Mei exactly the opposite. As Gemara said, Mei lost his two sons, and Bruria, they were in the attic, and Bruria gave her Mei the mushel. The pair was going to fall apart. He gave the mushel of somebody gives somebody two diamonds. So you see that she was stronger than he was. She was stronger than he was. Yeah. So it shows you that it doesn't mean to say, by the way, again, it doesn't mean to say, it means woman in general. It doesn't mean to say a specific woman. It's not, see, you have to understand something, that the whole idea of prejudice, the whole idea of being prejudiced is not in terms of universal characteristics, but in specifics. If a person will say in specific that an individual is such and such because he comes from such and such a place, that's a prejudice. You're not judging a person by their own self. But to deny general psychological truisms and trends in human nature is not being prejudiced. It's just not accepting reality. Not accepting reality. There's a certain reality, and there's a certain difference between man and woman. And the Chazal were pointing out to that difference. That a woman has a very strong emotional sensitivity, and because of that, certain areas are going to be very difficult for her to accept reality. More difficult than a man. Doesn't mean she won't be able to do it. Doesn't mean it depends on the person's bechira. She has bechira and dependent on how the person exercises their bechira. But to say that it's more difficult for her is not to put it down. It's just stating the fact that she's going to have a more difficult time in this particular area. That's because of her nature. Okay. I'd like to continue on the same topic we spoke about last week. The question of the equality between man and woman. I'd like to speak out against a certain view in particular. A type of view which I feel is very dangerous for Yahadus in general, and is one which is fairly common. The approach is to say that the reason why women are putter from Talmud Torah and from other mitzvah seishas man grama is because of the fact that a woman is inherently, intrinsically superior and does not require the mitzvahs that a man does. This view maintains that when a man makes the bracha in the morning, Shelo Asani Isha, that God did not make him a woman, he's actually being matzdik es hadin. He's lamenting. He's stating that, unfortunately, God did not make me perfect like he did a woman. On the other hand, when a woman says, Shasa'ani ketzono, that God created me as his will, that means to say that she is saying God created me in the most perfect possible way. That I am inherently, intrinsically superior, that I don't have the need for mitzvos like a man does, and that I can reach the love of God through my own intuition, not through Torah. To my mind, this is a very dangerous view, from several standpoints. Philosophically, to say that anyone can intuit what perfection is, what love of God is basically idolatrous. We cannot trust, it's a basic principle of Torah, that we cannot trust human intuition, male or female. The only way to reach God is through his Torah, through the Tzelem Elokim, which is man's ability to perceive the Chachmas Hashem, as all the Rishonim say. The moment we say we can trust human intuition, we can throw away the entire Torah. Not a single concept in Yadus has ever been forged based upon pure intuition, only upon halacha, upon rationality, and upon chachma. Whether a male or a female was the originator of the idea makes no difference, but the idea was always based upon chachma satara. From a logical standpoint, it fails to answer the question, because the question was that it's unfair that man should be treated in a superior fashion. But now it seems it's very fair if a woman happens to be superior. That might as well leave it the way you had it in the question originally, where the man was superior. Obviously, this answer is not a logical one, if your concern is with justice.
But aside from that, the reason why this approach is dangerous is because it negates the halachic system. It destroys the halachic system. I wonder, for instance, what that view would do with the Mishnah in the end of Harius. The Mishnah in the end of Harius says that when it comes to saving a person's life, so the Mishnah says, "Ish kodem u'ish alachias." When it comes to saving a person's life, so you save a man's life first. Okay? That means if a ship is going down, so contrary to the way Western society, women and children first, luck is no, the men are first. Okay. And for our Shabbos Aveda as well. It depends. Certain cases, the woman takes priority. Ksus. Certain needs that a woman has. Poverty. Pigin shvuyim. Redeeming someone that's a captive, women come first. There's different halachas, not just the men comes first in every situation. It's broken up into different categories. Okay. But nevertheless, we can't deny the halacha. And the Rambam says, in his Pirush Mishnayos, the reason is because a man has more kedusha. That's what he says. Because it's a continuation, and it's not the Rambam's own idea, because it's a continuation of the previous mission. Kolam Kodesh Mechavero, Kodesh Mechavero. So it's a continuation of the mission. Okay. Now, the Rambam says it, the Rav says it. It would turn out that, according to this approach, that the Mishnah and the Rambam were all bigoted, and they come from a remote past with primitive ideas, and we today are more enlightened. This, to say something like this, is completely against the Masara. Moreover, not only in that case, which of course the Mishnah can't answer the Mishnah, but insofar as the very halacha of the brachas, the way they have the brachas is completely false according to halacha. Why? First of all, the brachas Asana Ketzano, which they are making into the main bracha, is not even a bracha in the Zman Gemara. The Gemara doesn't even have that bracha. And the bracha didn't exist in the time of Chazal, and many don't even say it because of that. Matter of fact, the Aruch HaShulchan brings down the minhag not to say it anymore. Because the question of the source of the bracha, whether you can justify the bracha. Others that justify it, they justify it because they say it's matzdik esadim. The Torah is matzdik esadim. Tzidik adim means that I accept what God gave me, and a person has to be matzdik esadim no matter what happens. So we know of kishim shem avachon ala tov, kachon avachon ala ro. So the person has to be matzdik esadim and say, this is the way God created me, and I accept it. Not because of any superiority. Doesn't matter superiority, because you'd have no right to make the bracha to begin with, because you can't invent your own bracha after Chazal. But matzdik esadim, so a person has the right to matzdik esadim, that already has been universally accepted, so a woman has a right to make this bracha. Okay. So from a halachic standpoint, it holds no water. The Gemara also. From the Gemara Menachos also. This is a Gemara in this. Gemara Menachos says that a person that Mem Gemara days, Chayavad Levarach Sholosh Brachos B'chol Yom, Elohein, and the Gemara comes out, the first one is Shlosh Ani Goy, okay, and then it's Shlosh Ani Eved, and then Shlosh Ani Yishu. And the Gemara is Sakasha. Shlosh Ani Eved, so the Gemara is Sakasha, Hainu Yishu, the exact same thing. Why is it the same thing? Because since the bracha was niskan, why was the bracha established? The bracha was established for a very simple reason. Because a person is mechuyev to look to mitzvahs, to look forward to mitzvahs. Mitzvahs shouldn't be considered a burden, but on the contrary, we should recognize that mitzvahs are the greatest blessing. So therefore, Chazal Masakin, that a person should get up in the morning and he should realize that he's fortunate that he has mitzvahs. So a man who has the most mitzvahs has to be mevarech Hashem that he has these mitzvahs, the most mitzvahs of anybody. That's the purpose of the bracha, really. That's the idea behind the bracha. But the Gemara Shlosh Ani Eved Hainu Isha, it's the same thing, because Eved and Isha have the same amount of mitzvahs. So the Gemara says Eved Ziltfei. Right. One pshat is Ziltfei means that an Eved is inferior. Okay. Yeah. So therefore, it's still a progression. Shlosh Ani Goy, Shlosh Ani Yaved, and Shlosh Ani is a progression. You're not supposed to say the last bracha first. You're supposed to go in a progression. Matter of fact, you say the last bracha first, Shlosh Ani Yishu first. The question whether you can go back and say the other two. Okay, it's machlokes. But anyways. But nobody, yeah. So at any rate, okay. At any rate, so the Gemara says, Eved is Mezul Zultfei. So there's two pshatim. Why? One pshat is, plain pshat is because the reason why the Eved has less mitzvahs is because he has less kedushas Yisrael. Whereas an Isha doesn't have less kedushas Yisrael. It's just that she's patur in certain mitzvahs. The reason why an Eved has mitzvahs ki Isha is not because he's like an Isha. Because an Eved really, his kedushas Yisrael is incomplete until they free him. If they free an Eved, then his kedusha suddenly is consummated. But before they free an Eved, so his Kedusha is incomplete. It's an incomplete Kedusha. Yeah. So, that's one shot. The second shot is Ziltfei Kloma Zilvahosef. That there are two cases that there's nothing wrong with being Mosef over here. Because since there are two expressions of the same idea, but there are two particulars, so the Bracha was established in a way that a person should have the recognition twice. Because there are two separate cases. One case of less mitzvahs is Eved, one case is Isha. Okay. But according to this pshat, that we say that a woman is superior, I mean, it's a different thing altogether. They're saying that so that's the case? What's more, Kasha, Evan, and Isha the same? They're not the same? On the contrary, Isha, according to this pshat, means that he's saying that he's not on the contrary. It's not that he's... It's a tzidik adin. It's a different idea.
He's lamenting over the fact that he's not as perfected as a woman. Whereas when he's saying Shelo Asani Oved, he's saying something else. He's saying, he's praising God that he's not an Eved, that he has more mitzvahs than an Eved. So it's two different things, so the Gemara shouldn't have any problem. But the Gemara says that Eved Hayna Uisha, they're both the same. So this philosophy is against the Gemara, which shows you that you just can't have empty philosophizing without halacha, unless you're going to deny the Balei HaMasorah, unless you're going to deny the Gemara. This should serve as a warning against apologetics, which, in order to answer questions that modern society raises, an erotic society against the Torah, will go to any lengths, even if it means distorting the Torah and going against the Gemara and the Balei HaMasorah. This is unfortunate.